Welcome to the Rehabbing Podcast. My name is Frances, and I'm a master's student at the University of Toronto's Rehabilitation Sciences Institute. I'm also a research assistant in the Department of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy. Today, I'm joined by Stephanie Malloy and Aaron Keough from Justice Center Rehab, and I'll pass it off to both Steph and Aaron to introduce themselves.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Stephanie Malloy, and I'm a physiotherapist practicing in Montreal, but originally I'm from Winnipeg. So I have a bachelor's majoring in psychology from the University of Manitoba, and my master's is in physiotherapy from McGill. My bachelor helps inform my professional interest a lot, so I'm very passionate about bringing mental health into physiotherapy, among other things. Another passion is definitely social and health justice. So along with Aaron here, Noemi Tito, Gloria Di Iorio, Amy Gunn, and Sean Cleaver, we co-founded an organization named Justice Center Rehab, which we'll get to discuss more about today. I'm super excited about. And then I'm also interested in increasing access to physiotherapy and healthcare for marginalized populations, those with disabilities, immigrants, refugees, and the homeless population. And a fun thing this summer, I will be leading a master's student research project on what rehab services would look like in a homeless shelter in Montreal. Pass it off to Erin.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Erin Keough. I'm originally from Newfoundland and Labrador, but I'm practicing physiotherapy here in Montreal and Quebec. I have a bit of a mixed ancestry of both Inuit and Irish, and I'm still learning how to navigate that throughout my life. In 2016, I was diagnosed with a condition called myalgic encephalomyelitis, or more commonly known as chronic fatigue syndrome, and I've been living with that for 7 years now. My background is in therapeutic recreation and how leisure and recreation can globally have a positive impact on a person's health. I also did a master's of kinesiology at Memorial University of Newfoundland and studied the effects of experiential learning through internships. I, like Stephanie, helped create Justice-Centered Rehab with a group of like-minded individuals who wanted to discuss topics that, you know, weren't really taught or only briefly touched about in our curriculum, and we really thought they were pertinent to our profession and healthcare in general. I've always been interested in healthcare, and I'm sure I'll dive into that a little bit more throughout this interview, but I think overall I've just had this innate wanting to take care of people and this need to help. So that's basically why I joined Physio and why I helped out with Justice Center Rehab and how we're here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for your introductions. I'm really excited to have you both on the podcast and to have this critical lens on rehabilitation and rehabilitation professions today. So my first question to you both is, what is Justice Centered Rehab? And can you give a little background about how that came to be?
So Justice-Centered Rehab got started in the second year of our master's project. One of our professors was giving a presentation at a conference with some of his global colleagues on decolonization and rehab. And they started having a lot of injustices trying to create this presentation and not being able to get a translator in. And they felt that there was a lot of wrongdoing with this. So this professor reached out to us and asked if we had any ideas on like how we could spread awareness, maybe to use social media and stuff. And so Justice Center Rehab started around using social media to spread awareness about injustices in rehab. And then we really liked what we were doing so much that we just kept going with it. So like I said, we started on social media. So we're still using Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We have a website. We have a blog. And we're actually made up of a really wide variety of different people. So we have faculty, we have clinicians, we have students, in physiotherapy, occupational therapy, and other health rehab fields. And so we do like infographic posts on our social media summarizing different research or important topics. We host discussion events, seminars, online, in person. And so we're really just trying to raise awareness about different justice-centered topics.
And it's really important to say that's a really evolving project, you know, depending on who comes to certain events and who we discuss with. Our projects can really go anywhere. We've had coffee talks in the past. We usually meet on Zoom because we have meetings with people from all over the world. We've had people from Afghanistan, people from Nigeria, people from the UK all join in and have these great discussions on, you know, what is our kind of vision of what healthcare should be versus what barriers are we currently having? How do people access care now? What would care look like if things were different? And it's just this overall evolving thing because we get together with so many like-minded individuals and have these great conversations. And from these conversations, we spark new topics and new ideas and new projects. So it's kind of always evolving based on who we interact with. And it's really great that we're able to interact with so many people through all these social media outlets that Stephanie said. So we're not really based out of a specific place. Most of us are who started in Montreal, still in Montreal. But we have so many connections throughout the world, and it's really great to be able to connect with everyone through that. It's mostly healthcare professionals, but it's really open to anyone who wants to learn new ideas and learn about, you know, different injustices that are in our society today.
That's amazing how it started as a project within a program. I find that a lot of groups or little projects like that end when people finish their degree. So it's amazing to see it actually grow after you two graduated. So how and why did you become involved in Justice-Centered Rehab? I know you two are co-founders of it, but could you talk a little bit more about that process?
Personally, I have a history throughout the past 3 years of being really interested in justice in different ways and in helping people. Growing up, my parents were always really trying to point me towards helping other people and like how we can do that and like helping our community. In my bachelor's degree, one of my friends asked me to volunteer with them, with the organization WUSC, the World University Service of Canada. And they sponsor refugees to come do a secondary education in Canada from around the world. And so getting involved in that kind of things really opened my eyes to just how much injustice is in the world and how much there is that we can do to help. And then being in healthcare, that really shaped my lens to like now look at it professionally within a health rehabilitation lens. And then so when Sean reached out to me to get involved, it was something that really interested me, which I think is why he reached out, because I was already making it kind of known that I was interested in these topics and in global health. And so him reaching out to me really sparked my interest, and I was really excited to get involved with the project. And then we just had a lot of fun making the social media to start raising awareness. And then we realized kind of that we're actually reaching other people and like we actually are making a difference. So just realizing the impact that we can have was really inspiring and at least made me want to keep going and seeing like how much we can do with this. And as we delved deeper into it, we found kind of more and more injustices as we look at the many different realms of marginalization and different identities and how they each have their own different needs and their own ways that they're being oppressed by society and by healthcare. The more that I saw, the more that I felt like I wanted to help, and the more that we found having a platform like Justice-Centered Rehab was actually super essential, really gave me the motivation to keep doing.
And I, like Steph, I worked with Sean Cleaver before. I was on the Global Health Rehabilitation Initiative, where I had worked with him and worked with their events that they were hosting. And he was really inspiring about how, you know, physio is one thing, but there's so many other things we can do with that knowledge as well. And he really showed how many branches there are to go out on. So it was really amazing when he did reach out. I said, yes, absolutely, I will try this out. And I really enjoyed it. As someone who has navigated the healthcare system basically all my life, it's always interesting to see it from two different lenses, both as the patient and now as the practitioner. And so having those two lenses really influences my, you know, professional lens as well as just my day-to-day life. So being in this group of people who are willing to step out of their comfort zone and talk about these different topics, even when, you know, we might not know everything, when we start researching, we're able to get more knowledge and connect with the right people. It's just a really great way to get involved and get a lot more knowledge out there.
Yeah, I very much relate to being, I call it an insider-outsider, as someone who's disabled and has been through that weird transition of, I was a patient and now I'm a patient and someone who does research in health sciences. And it's been an interesting lens to take on. So how have you brought the teachings from Justice-Centered Rehab and your involvement over the years into either your profession or your day-to-day life?
I think that one of the biggest ways to kind of bring this into day-to-day life is really to be open and accepting. One of the things we do in our Justice-Centered Rehab sessions when we're having a group discussion is we always put out some community guidelines, and one of them is calling people in instead of calling people out. So basically, if someone says something that someone else doesn't either agree with or finds a little bit off, instead of calling them out and saying, no, they're wrong, calling them into the discussion and having that conversation as to why they think that way or why they said it that way and trying to understand better. And that's one of the kind of key processes that I try to have in my daily and professional life, is to be open and accepting. Because really one of the biggest parts of being a rehab professional is being able to accept a patient where they are in their journey and really help guide them to whatever steps are necessary for them. So, you know, we all have different backgrounds and cultures, and those are parts of the biopsychosocial model that really actually impact our healing. Not everyone has the same linear pattern of healing. So it's really important to reflect on that in our practices. And I think another really big part of this is the ability to critically analyze, and not only situations, but our own views as well. So we can critically analyze our patients' well-being and their file and everything, but then we also have to analyze our own thoughts and what we thought of when we read that file. So it's also really important, because our views and our calls at the end of the day can really impact the situation. We really want what's best for people and, you know, the equitable services that come along with it. But if we really take a step back and look at the system as a whole, which was built on these colonial principles, it might not always fit the needs of the patients and what they need to be successful and healthy. So it's super important for us to be able to flip that lens as well and kind of take it back in different steps and look at that to see how we can help navigate our patients through healthcare. And I think just in daily life as well, it's really important to be open and be okay with being wrong at the fact that, you know, we're trying to help and we're trying to do what's best, but sometimes what we think is best might not be best for someone else, and that we have to be able to navigate that and be able to be dynamic in our changes to be able to make sure the situation is as good as it can be.
Yeah, to kind of touch on what Erin was saying at the beginning about our discussions, one thing I really like about justice-centered rehab is that although we're like-minded in the way that we have really similar values and morals and like anti-oppressive ideologies, we definitely don't agree on everything. And we have a really wide range of people that participate. So we have students, we have practicing clinicians, we have teachers, we have researchers, we have sometimes people come that don't even work in healthcare and we're just interested in the topic that we were discussing that day. And so our discussions are always really fruitful because we don't always necessarily agree on everything, and we have such a wide variety of diverse opinions and backgrounds. So I find that our conversations are often like very rich in like politely kind of like criticizing each other or trying to interrogate kind of like where an idea might have come from. So that's something that I really value about justice-centered rehab. I feel like the teachings I get from justice-centered rehab and from the community, I really try to integrate like all these ideas into everything that I do. So it's really important to me that I don't just have like one set of values for my personal life and one for my professional life. I really want to ensure that it spreads throughout everything that I do in a holistic way. So I think overall, like, it really informs my choices and it helps me align my goals both personally and professionally. And I really just want to make sure that I'm not looking at just what I do as a therapist, but also what I do as an individual and as a community member, and how I can use the things from justice-centered rehab to give back to the community as well, not just within a physiotherapy setting, but also just like as a community member, how can I work in a holistic way with the community, with improving healthcare in general, with improving access needs just in general. So I try to kind of spread it out little by little in everything that I do.
How do you navigate prevailing conceptualizations of disability, that being Western neoliberal understandings of disability that are often pathologizing and deficit-based and individualizing, that have interacted with both your education and now currently your practice and profession?
So I definitely feel like this question has a few kind of different aspects. So I'll start with my education. It happened during my first degree in university, and it really did impact my learning there. But at the same time, it gave me, during my bachelor's degree, an understanding of how to work with my disability and try to do what's best for me, being the fact that I was at its worst, it was a very debilitating fatigue and would sleep for about 18 hours a day. So being in school at that point, it's quite difficult to navigate everything else. So I was able to start learning and then able to get myself on a track that was more functional for being in school and being able to adapt to everything. I will say for physiotherapy school, it was a bit hard. You know, we were through the pandemic. I moved away from home. And physiotherapy school is not easy. It's a very heavy course load. And I found it sometimes really difficult being in these rooms with such amazing, smart, talented people who just seem to know everything. And me sitting there with an invisible illness, I found it really bad that I was always comparing myself to all these able-bodied people. And I kind of forgot that, you know, my identity does change the way I learn and the way I navigate the world. And it's okay that it's different. And so I definitely had to take a step back and stop comparing myself so badly to everyone else, because we're all on our different journeys and that no one's journey looks the same. So I found that a little bit challenging, but I worked through it. One thing I always did find, though, is that kind of getting this diagnosis of a disability was a little bit of a relief, because I'd lived with it for so long and didn't know what it was. And having that kind of final term to put towards it gave it a little bit of relief. I was like, okay, so there is actually something wrong, and now we can use something to fix it. And I like how you asked about the deficit-based, because in my undergrad in therapeutic recreation, we don't look at deficit-based. We look at what patients can do versus what they can't do. So it was really amazing to use what I learned in my schooling to actually apply to my own life and see, okay, well, what can I do today? What can I do tomorrow? Those types of things to really go about it. And now working in physiotherapy as someone who works with people with disabilities, with illnesses, with injuries and pain, it's also very helpful that I have the background that I do with my own personal experiences. And that's why I try to use my voice as much as I can with my own platform, for Justice Centered Rehab, here with you in this podcast, to really advocate for people with disabilities and how we need so much more representation. Currently in healthcare, the majority of practitioners are, you know, able-bodied, coming from the more stereotypical places in society, straight, white, all of those things. And we need people who are more representative of society as a whole. And we need to support these people to gain these roles as providers in healthcare, to have this representation so that it gives our clients some more hope and some more guidance of where to go when maybe they don't fit in one of these kind of boxes that society has created for us. So while a lot of people may or may not like the term disability because it does create a box in this Western lens that we are currently living in our healthcare system, in some ways I found it quite liberating for myself because it allowed me to figure out who I was without having to be put in a different box where I didn't belong. So there's always that kind of in between where people do and do not like this term, and I completely understand both sides. And that's why when I'm participating with a client or anything in this or Justice Center Rehab, we are always open to letting people decide what they define themselves as or what they don't define themselves as. Navigating through with this disability has definitely impacted my practice and my profession, but I think it's made it for the better now that I'm able to live with it. And I know not everyone has that same experience, but right now it's quite good.
Just to add on to this conversation, I feel like the large foundation of the definition of disability is really based in like capitalism and like, can you work? Can you still go to work? And can you still like bring in income and capital? And I think this idea of disability is whether or not you can be productive is like super harmful. To talk about, I guess, a bit more personal story, throughout my entire life, I've had chronic pain, but I don't identify as being disabled because I can still go to work and I can still do sports and I can still do school. And even though I have some really bad days, and some days it is, I'm not able to do the things I want to do in general. I still don't identify as disabled, but it's such an interesting way to kind of look at it. Is like, if I kind of interrogate that a bit more, I'm like, yeah, I'm not disabled, because then even though I have super bad or sometimes mild pain every single day, I can still go to work. And so like, I must be fine. And I feel like we're really bad that since, since we're being integrated into society. So I think it's really important that we look at that not just for ourselves, but how we're teaching that in school, teaching that to others, and how we're also like applying that onto our clients or our patients, and like really making sure that we're not projecting that onto them and that we're looking at goals outside of, can you return to work? Can you return to sports? And not shaming anyone whose goals like falls outside of, I just want to like cope with my pain and that's my goal. Or like, my goal is not to walk again. It's, you know, just to learn how to do transfers from my wheelchair to my bed or whatever it is. I'll probably touch on this a bit more later. But yeah, I find that like that Western capital understanding of disability is super harmful. And I think, like Erin was saying, really puts people in boxes, and that they can be inclusionary boxes at times, but often like exclusionary, and that it's way more of a spectrum than a box. So the conceptualization shouldn't be so hard-edged.
Yeah, and that's why they come back to how we should meet our patients where they are, not where we expect them to be or where we expect them to go. Because it's really important that, you know, in school we're taught one way, but there's a million different ways to handle situations. So meeting clients where they are and understanding that we might not follow that traditional pathway that our current healthcare system has been set to go is quite beneficial for the patients, because at the end of the day, you want what they want for themselves, even if it's not the same as what you think they should want. And it's always great to have that distinction between the two things and understand that our clients' priorities are far first the most important thing when it comes to treating them, instead of just being like, your goal should be to walk. Well, maybe that's not their goal at this time. And being able to adapt for their goals is beneficial.
Delving more into your identities, Erin, what do you dream and desire for Indigenous people in our field?
This is a great question. And to give a little bit of a background about what my kind of response is, I'll talk about my last clinical placement that I had in my schooling. So I did a placement in Quebec. I won't talk about which community it was, but I was in an Indigenous community. And one of the big problems there was that we had a 400 people wait list to access physiotherapy care. So as we know in physio, if a injury goes untreated for so long, it can develop into chronic pain, even when it's a injury that could have been prevented to have this chronic pain occur. So they asked me to kind of look into, well, what can we do for chronic pain? And we had just finished one of our last educational semesters, and we just had this big course on chronic pain. So I started, you know, looking up what we had learned about in that course to see if I could implement anything there. And luckily, I was really close with a lot of the nursing staff and rehab monitors, who were people who helped with the physio overload in the community. And I sat down with them one day and just asked, you know, we have this chronic pain thing. They kind of want to host seminars about what pain is and how we can help to kind of decrease that chance of increasing having chronic pain while they're on the waitlist for physio. You know, what do you think about having some kind of group sessions about chronic pain? They really talked to me about, we're outsiders of the community. There's still a big mistrust in the healthcare system because of everything that happened in residential schools and the mistreatment of Indigenous people and you know, what happened to Joyce Eshwan a couple years ago. And so they wanted to let me know that we want services, but we don't want them in the way that you think they should run. And that was a really great opportunity for me to learn about how colonialistic our healthcare system still is, and how these people, this group of individuals, really didn't want exactly what we had from this box of chronic pain management, and how they have their own traditional healing, and talking about pain is something that's quite sacred to them, and it's not as open to do in a group setting. So it was really interesting to have that kind of shift of perspective of how we have all these great resources, but they're not going to work for the community that they want it to be implemented in. Overall, my dreams and desires for Indigenous people is for them to get the care that they want and they deserve. And that might not be what our current system looks like. And so I hope that there's a way that we can come together and have some, you know, elder guidance or guidance from the communities to be able to tell people in power what they need, and that they actually receive it. And that's a two-step process. Once they need to actually have the voice and the place to safely talk about what they need. And then step two is actually initiating what they need. And so we need to take us and the colonialistic healthcare perspective need to take a step back from our egos when we're told that what we're providing isn't good or not needed the way it is in the community. And we need to listen to what our patients are saying and how we can help them get the care that they need. And so maybe for us, that means we actually let the elders run the sessions, or maybe that means we interact with the medicine men who are in the community and try to figure out a care plan that works for both ways to be able to be more holistic. So at the end of the day, I really think that the dream is to have a holistic place that is safe and sacred for people to come and access care without judgment, without bias, without fear, and be able to live the life that they want to live within the healthcare system that they helped create.
There have been calls for increased accessibility in the rehabilitation professions and sciences have been made, and accessibility itself has many definitions. So I'm wondering, Steph, what does increasing accessibility mean and look like to you in your practice and profession?
So I think this is a really great question. And like you said, there's many different definitions to accessibility. So it might be a bit of a long answer, but I find that two really important guiding questions within this realm is the first one is who is accessing care or who is care designed for? And then also who feels welcomed and safe accessing physiotherapy and other rehab services? So within that realm, there's a lot of different barriers that can come up. So the first one is definitely the financial cost of physiotherapy. I think that's a huge barrier. There's other countries in the world that have successfully integrated physiotherapy completely free, covered by the government. So it's definitely doable. But in Canada, unfortunately, like, we don't have anything like that. So I think that the cost of physiotherapy is a huge barrier, because even though there is some access through the public system, the wait list is quite literally years long, especially for the quote unquote non-priority patients. So usually, like, if you've just gotten a surgery, you'll get seen within a week or two. But if you have any other kind of injury, long-standing pain, chronic problem, you're most likely going to be waiting years to get seen in an outpatient clinic. So at that point, the best case to get seen faster is to go the private clinic access, of which there's many throughout Canada. But then there's the financial cost, especially if you don't have insurance covering that. So I think that's a really big barrier. So within that barrier professionally, I'm working in partnership, like I said, with a homeless shelter in Montreal to do research this summer as a master's research project. So we'll be working with the clients and with the staff on their perspectives of rehab and how it could be integrated at their site, with the hopes of actually creating positions in the future. So looking primarily at occupational and physical therapy. And of course, I would also love in the future to personally be able to provide low cost or free services. But for me, it's really important that I actually want to, like, develop my knowledge a bit more and my professional skills more, since I've only been working for about a year now, to ensure that I'm delivering the best quality care that I can, which I think is really important, that I don't want to just offer free physiotherapy because I'm a physiotherapist, but I want to make sure it's the most trauma-informed, most accurate, and the best care that I can be giving, because I think that everyone deserves that. And I think within the financial cost, there's something else to look at is physiotherapy as a business, since it is really privatized. And so, like, we were talking about the definitions of disability and what patients' goals might be. And I think that having that for-profit model within physiotherapy is actually really harmful to the care we give, whether or not we're aware of it. But I think it can intrinsically or subconsciously kind of be in your actions and your guiding goals and interactions with your patients. So I think that's another important thing to look at. Another aspect of accessibility is, like you said, we feel safe and welcome within rehab settings. So I think physical rehab settings and the profession as a whole really pushes for a point of view that basically says disability is bad and we want to help you fix it or avoid it. because we know you don't want to have it because it's a bad thing to have. So kind of like Erin was saying earlier as well, your goal must be to walk because everyone wants to walk, and that's not always the case. So there's not a lot of room for people who have permanent disabilities, who still have injuries, who still have pain, who want strategies to move and work and play within their ability instead of quote unquote recovering from it. So I think that's a really terrible thing that happens within our profession. And the same thing applies not just with disability, but also with other marginalized identities. Like Erin said, who are physiotherapists? So if you Google image search physiotherapy or physiotherapist, you're going to see a lot of thin white people. And so what does that say to fat folk or BIPOC folk or LGBTQ people wanting to access gender-affirming physiotherapy? Like, how do they know that they're safe? So I think it's really important to work within that realm as well. Like, who is physiotherapy designed for? So again, for me personally, what I'm trying to do is I try to do a lot of reading about different marginalizations and how they apply to physiotherapy. So it can be learning more about pre and post rehab for top surgery, reading about the experience of BIPOC clients in rehab settings so I can like better myself and better understand their situations and avoid causing more medical trauma, because we know all marginalized populations have medical trauma at a much higher frequency and don't often feel safe accessing care. So I try to put in my work to educate myself because I don't really have marginalized identities to really try to learn more about what they're going through and how can I make my care as safe and welcoming as I can. And then, of course, applying that to my work settings to make sure it's not just me within a harmful setting, but trying to like promote the whole space and my colleagues as well. And then another huge area is, of course, physical accessibility. So can you physically access the space and are they physically welcoming? So are your clinics, hospitals, rehab centers close to bus lines? Do they have parking? Are they wheelchair accessible? Is the waiting room big, have chairs that are big enough to accommodate larger folks? Are there private rooms available, or is it all like an open concept clinic? Are there treatment and workout spaces available without mirrors on the wall for people that aren't comfortable like seeing themselves or having other people see them? So I think these questions are not often brought up, and clinic owners or hospital owners, whatever, are not usually thinking about them since we don't offer centered marginalized perspectives. So how can we know that we're causing harm if we never ask or bother to listen to these people? So I try to bring these ideas up in the places that I work to see how improvements can be made. And again, this is based on like education I've been seeking out for myself to try to like gather these perspectives. And then lastly, like how I'm trying to increase accessibility and like work within these fields is all my work with Justice Centered Rehab. So I do a lot of the social media posts. So you'll see a lot of summarized research and articles. So I try to make a variety of different posts about different topics, even ones that like aren't a community that I'm a part of. I really try to seek out like different perspectives, different marginalized identities, uplift their voices, looking not just at formal research, but also informal research or sources and articles. Since of course it's more difficult as a marginalized person to get kind of formal research out there because there's so much barriers within academia. And then just in general, just as Justice Centered Rehab, trying to get more of this information out there to try to get more and more clinicians thinking about this. So a bit of a long answer, but it's a super big topic, and I think all the different variations of it have to be addressed.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to add, you know, Steph talks about feeling safe, feeling welcome, the financial cost, the physical accessibility of a space. These all kind of are under the umbrella of, okay, as physiotherapists, we get an hour max with our patients. There's 23 hours left in their day. So how do all of these other influential things compound onto their illness or whatever we're treating them for, their injury or their condition? So we have to think about, yeah, okay, our patient is in our space, and if we make it financially accessible, and if we make it safe, and if we make it welcome, and if we make it physically accessible, what about everything else? What about everything else that's happening in their life? Are there going to be influences that are outside of our clinic or our treatment space that are going to hinder their care or hinder their progress? How, as physios, can we adapt to that? How are we able to help that with still staying within our own scope of practice? I don't think we should, you know, reach out beyond our scope and try to help in ways that we can't because we're not trained. But just always have that kind of in the back of our head that even if we make everything accessible here, what else is happening throughout their life that could influence what's happening here?
I think a great example to draw on about that is last month, Aaron and I both participated in the first International Environmental Physiotherapy Festival. And an idea that came up within that festival in environmental physiotherapy is, what's the point of treating your patient and getting them better and back to their activities if the environment is just going to make them sick again and undo all of the work that you just did? As we were talking about the effects of wildfire smoke on people's lungs, and like, you know, there's so many ways that climate change can affect someone's health, like heat waves, cold waves, everything. And so we were thinking about that concept of, our therapy can't stop at the door of the clinic. It has to extend into these different realms. And for me, it's really important that it extends into advocacy, it extends into advocating for policy change, and like really that more macro and global level. So I think it's the same for accessibility. Like Erin said, our clients don't exist in a vacuum, and their lives don't stop at the door of a clinic or the door of the hospital. And so we can't just treat their injury. We have to treat the other outside factors that are also affecting them, because what's the point of helping someone with their chronic back pain if they're just gonna go outside and experience racism and get traumatized from that, which is gonna like reactivate their chronic pain because it's so closely interlinked with like psychology. So I think, like Erin said, it's really important, and something that's really important to me as well, is to like a lot of advocacy outside of your professional work, but to try to make society as a whole better so that these traumas and these harms just like stop happening in general, so that we don't have to help as many people. It would be better if they just were able to, like, if they felt empowered to manage things on their own or with their communities, or, you know, was just kind of acute injuries, which are always going to be inevitable, and less of this chronic persisting pain that can be the result of, like, so much trauma.
Yeah, it was a pretty open-ended, large question that I asked you. and I'll ask you another one. So I guess building off what both you and Erin just spoke about, from your perspectives, what is largely absent from our conversations or just general conversations about accessibility and physiotherapy?
So I feel like this is similar to many different fields. And the short answer is disabled people, marginalized people, they're missing from the conversations. And like, despite being a profession that's literally based on helping people in times of injury and temporary or permanent disability, it's uncommon, at least from my experience, to see a person with a visible disability or someone saying that they have an invisible disability working or teaching in rehab sciences or being accounted for to inform our work. So by that, I mean like a lot of research and opinion gathering from patients is not always used to interrogate what they feel is missing or improvements could be made or like harms that were made against them. But there's way more studies about trying to understand people's perceptions of pain or their subjective view of their progress versus objective progress. Like, I remember a conference I went to this summer, one of the posters was that like patients can't tell that they're getting better type idea. So like their perception of their pain wasn't matching their objective progress. And I was like, well, if they don't think they're doing well, I think we should focus more on that, whether or not they have 5 more degrees of like knee flexion or whatever. So I think a lot of work is still to be done to center disabled voices, especially those with intersectional marginalized identities. I think it's super important to break down barriers to access our schooling, our teaching, our workforce, and then of course the barriers as a client or patient as well. And I think partnering with and actually listening to disabled people would be the best thing to do for increasing accessibility within the field. But I think it's important to note that I don't want to minimize the work that is being done in the field, because there absolutely is great advocates out there. There is people doing research on like the experiences of BIPOC people in physiotherapy school and stuff like that. So for some examples I wanted to talk about, was a research program that I've been briefly involved with that began by asking people in Zambia with disabilities about what they thought was important to them. And then that evolved into an entire project about knowledge translation for disability and policy. So that was really centered around centering disabled voices. There's like more and more education series within professional bodies, such as like the American Council of Academic Physical Therapy has like webinars on physical therapy and critical perspectives of disability. The Canadian Physio Association as well is doing like more and more informative series on this. And then of course there's the less macro level, so the more micro level work that different people and workplaces are doing locally and at more one-to-one level. So I think it is important that even though there is a lot of gaps and a lot of issues, that we don't minimize that there is great work out there that is actually happening.
I'll go off that. I'll give an example of some great work that is happening. Stephanie Nixon is an amazing person. At the time she was at Queen's University, I cannot confirm if she is still there, but she came up with this coin model. So basically it talked about privilege and oppression on like a coin, you know, how there's two sides. And the privilege being the top of the coin, where you have this advantage that others don't, but you didn't really earn it. It's just who you happen to be, who you happen to be born in our society currently. And then there's the coin itself, which is the social structures that produce and maintain this inequality of, you know, sexism, racism, ableism, those kinds of things. And then the bottom of the coin being the oppression of you have this disadvantage that others don't. And again, it's only because of who you are. So coming back to talking about what's largely absent from conversations is that a lot of the time using this model is that people forget that oftentimes people in healthcare are on the top part of the coin, on the privilege side. And so there's so many people who aren't represented because they don't come from the system of oppression, because the way the coin model works and the system works is that the people in the oppression side usually end up staying there. And so looking at that is that we had the great chance of being able to be born to this life and be able to do what we're doing because of this privilege. And it is a privilege to be here. It's a privilege to be a physiotherapist. It's a privilege to be in healthcare in general. But we need to understand that that is a privilege and that we grew up in a certain way, but we're caring for people who may not be coming from the same side of the coin as us. And that having more people discuss this and in our conversations as healthcare professionals in general, I think it would really change the way in which we look at how to proceed with healthcare and how to treat everyone with equity, not just equality, and how we're able to help people throughout many systems that's not just related to, you know, I'm here for XYZ, and really look at it more holistically in general.
So thank you both so much for coming on this podcast episode. It's been quite refreshing for me to listen to both of you talk about the field and your work in it and your dreams and thoughts about everything, because I think these are perspectives that I love hearing about and I share with my friends, but I often don't hear as much rich, detailed conversation outside of the little circles I might be in. So to close us out, what does shaping and disrupting rehabilitation look like to you?
So I think kind of just to go off what you just said, that a lot of people feel like they're the only ones having these conversations and having their thoughts, and they're not extending outside their bubble, and you can really feel like you're the only person maybe that thinks this way in your city or in your country or even in the field. So I think having something like justice-centered rehab is disrupting rehabilitation and is creating a sense of community where people that have these ideologies are coming together, and it's so powerful to see that other people are thinking the same way you are and that you're not alone in this battle, which can sometimes really feel like an uphill battle that is difficult to make progress in. So it's really refreshing and inspiring to see people from around the world coming together and talking about these topics and having rich discussions and really actionable takeaways and like things that we can actually do that are tangible. So I think it's so important to have something like justice-centered rehab, and that that in itself is shaping and disrupting rehabilitation globally. I think it's also so important to call out bias and harmful ideas, thoughts when you see them, or to correct myself, not to call out, but to call in, like Erin was talking about from before, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt and trying to, you know, extend to them care as well, even if they're having a harmful idea to try to educate them on what might be wrong with that and what's something that they can do better. So calling people in is super important whenever you see something that's not right. Another important way that we're shaping and disrupting rehabilitation, I think, like I said, having justice-centered rehab. So within that, we're trying to get people to interrogate where we came from, who and what formed our systems, and who is left out. So as LGBTQ health activist Zana Sharman says, the system isn't broken. It's working exactly as it's designed to. The healthcare system, it was designed to exclude certain people. So any effort in increasing accessibility and inclusion is itself disruptive because it was never designed to have that taken into consideration. It was never designed to be welcoming to everybody. And so also in regards to shaping rehab, to me, it looks like imagining new futures, imagining what new systems could look like, new ways of rehab and ways that it can move away from its current harmful system to create something, you know, altogether that's inclusive to everyone. And the only way that we're going to get there is, you know, to imagine something new and involve everybody within that.
Yeah, to go on what Steph said, I think, you know, shaping and disrupting rehabilitation is really starting with these conversations, you know, having these podcasts, having our JCR posts and our JCR coffee talks and those kinds of things. Because as people in general might not have the same experiences, you know, that we grew up with, that we were influenced to join this community where we want to disrupt and reshape rehab. Whereas people may have just, you know, wanted to do physio because they wanted to do physio and they grew up in that system and they're continuing to work through that system. And that's the way that they know. So for us, I think having those conversations and just putting those little thoughts in there that maybe the system isn't working the way it should be or the way it could be really helps to start that snowball effect of getting things to go. And I think as well, just as new practitioners, because myself and Steph have only been practicing for a year, is that we're still learning how the system is currently and how we would like to see it change. So sometimes, you know, when you're having a really busy day, you fall back into the thoughts of the way the system is. And even just calling yourself in on your own thoughts and thinking, okay, how can we actually change the thought I just had? And how can I influence this to help disrupt this way to be able to make the system a bit better or help this one patient in need? Ideally, in a perfect world, patients would be treated holistically and they would get the care that they want and need and deserve. And I would hope that rehab eventually will look like that. I know we talked a lot about disrupting the way rehab is currently, and there are a lot of great things about our profession and about how rehab is in general. This is in no means of a way to kind of just talk all bad about how things are going in the system, because there are so many amazing things. But there's way more amazing things we can also add as well. So I think kind of trying to work with the system to be able to integrate new ways is always going to help to disrupt the current system and move it towards a system that will work for more people. As Steph said, it was created to create this divide, and us at JCR want to acknowledge and help decrease that divide that's currently there and try to make a new system that is less harmful for people in need.
So in addition to JCR and the amazing blog posts and events that you have and continue to have, do you have any resources, books, stories, movies, or anything else that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
So this is a super hard question to answer because there's so many different things. And there's a number of different things out there depending on what topic exactly you're interested in. There's different forms of media, different justice topics. One book that made a really huge impact on me is The Care We Dream Of by Zana Sharman. I can't recommend it enough. It really had a huge impact on me when I read it. And I definitely frequently go back to it and her different teachings. And I'll also mention two books that I'm really excited to read soon. The first one is Occupational Therapy Disruptors, What Global OT Practice Can Teach Us About Innovation, Culture, and Community. And the other book that I recently got, I'm excited to read, is Anti-Racist Occupational Therapy, Unsettling the Status Quo. And I also just wanted to highlight some cool programs that I've seen happening in Montreal, which can kind of inspire people. So Le Frigo Vert, which is an organization in Montreal that does like affordable food and stuff like that, that hosts affordable classes for focusing on queer people with pain and stuff like that. And they're hosted by Andrea Peloto, who's a queer Feldenkrais practitioner, which is a type of like mindful embodiment of movement. So you can find them on Instagram. And there's also a handle on Instagram, which is at MTL Community Healing. And they host community healing days, which has monthly low-cost body work and traditional therapies for low-income and marginalized communities. And so I think it's really cool to see this community-level and person-to-person approach about providing low-cost, affordable, and trauma-informed care. I think that's really amazing. And like I said, there's so many other things out there, so I'll send some more stuff to you, Francis, that you can add to the text on the page with this episode, because we definitely have some articles, podcasts, other Instagram accounts that are worth checking out.
Yes, so I will be linking Justice Centered Rehab and all of the articles, people, and resources that Steph just mentioned, as well as the articles and resources that Erin and Steph mentioned throughout this episode. So thank you both so much again for being on the Rehab Inc. podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a lot of fun. Oh, and I guess Erin and I will also include our emails so that if anyone wants to reach out to us, we're always accessible. And you can also reach us, of course, through any Justice Centered Rehab platform.
Yes, thank you so much for having us. And I guess just kind of a closing remark is that, you know, we joined Physio to help patients rehabilitate mostly physical injuries, and we came into school not realizing the realm of which rehab has so many different elements to it. So if anyone ever has any questions, even just about physio in general or how the Justice Centered Rehab to get involved, you can let us know. But thank you so much today for having us on the Rehab Inc. podcast. We're super excited to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rehab Inc. podcast. To support us, please subscribe and rate our student-run podcast on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play Music. You can also find us on our website, rehabincmag.com/podcast. Stay tuned for future episodes on rehab, research, and practice.